Kepler ray pattern is very striking in this light. An anastomosing series of bands, which only average being radial. In most cases, they're a little off radial, but by joining together, they give you a general radial pattern. I just want to see. Okay, out the window 4, I have an excellent view of Kepler. Once again, albedo differences such as the are very clear, such as the distinction between the wall light or brighter wall materials and the rim, which in itself is brighter than the surrounding mare. We can look right down some of the rays, and the rays are not completely linear. I'm looking now to the northwest. Yeah, Gene, you can see Aristarchus way up there in the northwest. See it?
Yeah.
You ought to have a good view of Aristarchus. Very bright up in the northwest part of our field of view.
The inside of that crater almost looks as if it's backlit.
That's right. Well, it should be, strangely enough. And but I want these rays, when contrast to the maybe the feeling one would have that they are, once they get started, they form a linear pattern across the surface. They don't seem to have done that. As a matter of fact, they're quite strikingly curved along their pattern. They'll break from the general radius they're out on, curve away, and then curve back. See, there are one, two, three, four rays that go from out from to the northwest of Kepler, all of which show that non-linear characteristic.
Yeah, they're all radial, though.
They are radial in general, but when you look at them in detail, only portions of them are radial. And a single ray, which you can follow continuously, will bend and then curve back.
It's unique. We've got rays from, I guess those must be Copernicus over here, those long ones out to the right, which you may not be able to see. Kepler and Reiner, all intermingling up here.
Yeah, this is the area now we're going over where the gamma ray work on 15 indicated a relatively high radioactivity. And not yet. It's...
Houston, America, here. You see the torque at angle?
I was going to look for the Hortensius domes near Copernicus, but got sidetracked with Kepler and missed them. They were not obvious,
Ron.
You're looking in the general.
Okay, I'll torque at 845.
Roger.
Okay, we're getting out into Procellarum, Oceanus Procellarum proper now, and before long should pick up the medial ridge that makes that mare so distinctive from the other mare. That's the ridge that stretches something like 2,000 kilometers north to south, if you want to tie a number of things together. And probably... is the moon's closest analogy to an oceanic ridge, which has been in the news over the last decade.
Roger.
Once again, the topography of the... Procellarum Mare is not clear in this light. It's just not quite enough light to give you strong, distinct shadows, at least not yet at this Earth angle.
Okay, and as you get the camera set up for the orbital science pictures of Galois, we'd want to change and use magazine OO instead of KK. That's listed in the flight plan at 9020.
Okay, we'll do that. out of the window 4, I'm able to see some of the Rhinogamma materials. And it's awful hard to say more than just the fact there is a very clear light-colored pattern off to the north of our position at any rate. I think all I can say is that I've seen it. I can't give you much information on it.
Okay.
You can see the area where Marius Hills should be, although it's not an obvious topographic feature in this light. Still see Aristarchus off up there, shining like a star, if the moon could have stars.
Okay, Houston, I'm going to torque those course line errors out at 1-2.
Roger, Ron.
And you squared away.
And it's good to be able to see some stars out of the telescope. That's the first time I've been able to see any.
Marty, we have a very clear zero phase point for the Earth light. It's certainly not as strong contrast as for the sun, but it's out there, and within it, again, the fresh craters tend to brighten quite a bit more than the surrounding mare. Still looking at Oceanus Procellarum, and now at window 3. Up to the north, west, Grimaldi is starting to show up. Very obvious dark area within the highlands of that part of the moon. And one of the darkest Mare regions that we have seen on the moon. It's comparable, at least in the photograph, to that of Tsiolkovsky.
Roger.
Normally, of course, we think of the dark Mare as being the younger basalt flows that on the moon. But in our case, of course, young means something on the order of 3 billion years or older.
Roger.
If we can extrapolate from the samples returned by other missions. Amazing how far over. Now, the highlands to the west of Procellarum are still are bright, and the contrast between fresh craters and the Norma Highland are very obvious still in Earth light, particularly along the zero base point with respect to the Earth. Rhinogamma now is coming a little bit closer to our oval track in the horseshoe in the larger and more western end of it. The dark horseshoe is quite clear in this light. That's the west or northwest pointing horseshoe. As is the complete trend of that strange feature. I think Ron is going to have an excellent chance to study these light-colored swirls within the Mare and other parts of the moon. We had some good views of them in Mare Marginis to the east of Crisium, Mare Crisium, and he should, if there's anything to be seen, he should be able to see it for during the next few days.
Ron, can you
Okay, yep.
Hey, Gordo, something I just noticed here in working with the GDC, what have you, I looked at the PC gauge, and in a PC position, there's a continuous bias on it now of about 0.07%, and if I switched off, it goes to zero. We never saw that bias before this last burn.
Roger, Gene.
Hey Gordy, I'm looking right up the western edge of the Procellarum Mare, where it contacts the western highlands of the moon, and we're just about to fly a little bit south of Grimaldi. That edge is very irregular. There is no obvious indications that there are large basins that have been flooded by Mare that have formed that edge. But again, the topographic distinctions possible in this light are small. Now I'm starting to see that there are shadows in the craters.
Roger.
That's the small craters. They're in the Mare Procellarum, closest to Grimaldi. There are two arcuate rills. Look like they're probably V-shaped in their cross-section. I'm sure we've seen those on the photographs much better than I can see them here. Those, the rill patterns, though, do seem to project over into the highlands.
Okay.
To the north of Bay of Mare. Just interrupt. Hey, I just saw a flash on the lunar surface.
Oh, yeah?
It was just right out there north of Grimaldi. Just north of Grimaldi. You might see if you got anything on your seismometers, although a small impact probably would give a fair amount of visible light.
Okay, well, check.
It was a bright little flash right out there near that crater. See the crater right at the edge of Grimaldi? Then there's another one north of it. Fairly sharp one north of it is where there was just a pinprick of light.
How about putting an X on a map where you saw it?
I'm going to keep looking occasionally for... yeah, we will. I was planning on looking for those kind of things. Starting to see the edge of Oriental, Gordy. Way off to the west. Hey, just yell, Gene, anytime you... Gordy, to the north of Grimaldi, there's a large basin that is about the same size, but only incompletely filled with Mare in its northeastern quadrant. The rest of it looks like a fairly irregular and hummocky floor material of some kind.
Roger.
But it's almost the same size as Grimaldi. It even looks like it's a little bit deeper. But, of course, Grimaldi has a considerable fill. Grimaldi, on its eastern edge, has some of the Graben, or its rim, if you will, is cut by three or four anastomosing robins that make it look like some of the bench areas in the larger basin. Okay, the first ring of Oriental is showing up. The next ring in is extremely obvious. It's got some very bright east-facing slopes. I'll turn off the intercom. It has some very bright east-facing slopes. You can see the bands of Mare that are filling the both the first bench area and the inner bench. Anytime you need us, Gordy, just interrupt me.
Okay, we'll do that.
As I look north along the first bench, that's the first bench from the outside, one inside the Cordillerian ring. I better check that. I may have my names mixed up. Got Oriental there. Andy. Let's see. Should be on there. Yeah, this one's what I need. What's the name? They got a name on that ridge there? That's Rook Mountains. Yeah, the Cordillera. Yeah, that's right. Looking just west of the Cordillera on the first bench, as I look north, in this light, which is casting some shadows now, Gordy, over in here, it looks extremely smooth. Now, this is not Mare, it's lighter albedo, lighter reflectivity than the Mare, and although there are patches of Mare in the low areas in it. But looking along that plane, in fact, a long linear plane, it looks quite smooth with only some very broad undulations that appear to be roughly radial to Oriental itself. The more closer we get to it, the more I see minor relief showing up. I start to see the shadows, I guess. And that relief seems to bring out a hummocky texture in addition to the craters that you would expect to see there.
Roger.
I won't try to give you a trend on the hummocks because I think the shadows are biasing my view. They do appear to be north-south trending, but I think that's because of the shadow patterns. This is a spectacular sight, you guys. You ought to take a look at Oriental. One of the largest fresh basins on the moon. It still is probably 4 billion years old, or 3.8 at any rate, if our dating criteria are any good. It has the outer Cordillerian ring and the inner ring called the Rook Mountains. Very, very nicely shown. There are massif on that inner ring, the Rook Mountain ring, there are massif complexes, much like what we'll be studying at Taurus Littro. There are low areas, non-Mare areas, that are comparable to some to the Taurus de Valley that we'll be landing in. And in all, I think we'll find that our ring in the Taurus Littro area around Serenitatis is comparable in many regards to this Rook Mountain ring around Oriental. Did you interrupt, Gordy?
No, I didn't say anything.
Okay, I thought I heard your key. Okay, in the inner portion of Oriental, as we approach the Terminator, the lighting is still excellent. Matter of fact, it appears brighter than what we were looking at over Copernicus. Now, part of that may be we're seeing much sharper relief since the slope, Earth-facing slopes are nicely lit, and the back-facing slopes, of course, are in shadow. The first portion of the bench inside the Rook Mountains is partially filled by mare. Now, the higher land in there is very smooth, in a gross sense, is a very smooth, hummocky terrain cut by roughly circumferential grabens. The trend of the hummocks themselves are not radial. They're more, well, they're about a 45-degree angle to the radius. They, in detail, have a much finer hackly texture, much like we've been able to see on photographs before. And in general, you get the impression that in several areas here, that that hackly textured surface is draped over material that resembles the massifs of the Rook Mountains themselves. There's one area just to the north now of our track where there's a large, roughly equidimensional mountain mass with a few projections of massif-like peaks through this hackly textured surface.
Roger.
There are also some radial grabens. I just now picked one up, which we've also seen on the Oriental photographs taken by Lunar Orbiter. It's amazing how fresh appearing this basin looks, considering its great age. But it's it probably has not had any more violent a history than Imbrium. Now we're getting up just about to go over a Delta Rim crater that's out in the basin. I don't remember the name of it offhand, but it's be familiar to some of the geologists who have mapped this basin. It does not appear to have a strong impact ejecta blanket around it. It's filled with mare and is quite sharply in contrast to a crater of comparable size to the northwest. See that, Ron? I don't really get it. I got a good view out of five now of that one. And once again, it looks as if this hackly textured material that forms the higher hills in the inner bench has a draped appearance over the over pre-existing terrain. And in fact, along the ridges of the hummocks, we now can pick up little rills that roughly parallel the hummocks, although not consistently. They do cross down into the valleys, but it has appearance that there may have been a tensional relief along the crests of each of the hummocks, or many of the hummocks. Delta Rim crater, just as has been, I think, discussed in the literature, has just that, Delta Rim with no obvious ejecta blanket around it compared to other larger craters within the basin. We're directly over that crater right now. It's filled with mare, very smooth mare. Matter of fact, within that fill, I can see no craters. Getting very close to the Earth terminator, but you can see good texture in the ejecta blanket of the large crater in the north part of the inner basin of Orientale. The radial ridge and valley patterns are very clear. The concentric coarse hummocks near the rim are apparent, and you can even see the second patterns of secondaries, the larger secondaries, extending out away, radially out away from that crater. The south, the Mare fill in the south floor of Copernicus, Oriental, is very smooth, but does have the sea swell texture that we saw over in Tranquilitatis. Better to let them say something before AOS.
No, we got nothing
Houston,
to say.
I guess we're getting close to AOS. We're getting close to AOS. Do you have some words for us?
Okay, we show about 9 minutes to LOS. We'd like to clarify one thing, and that was on this tape recorder commands and high and low bit rate. And we just want to make it clear that pre-burn, the 6 minute call out is high bit rate, record, forward, command, reset. Did you tell us a few minutes ago that you did indeed do all those at about 6 minutes?
Yeah, Gordy, I certainly thought I did, but I can't specifically, I know the high bit rate was there because we switched to low later. I'm afraid I can't specifically verify the command reset.
Gordy, I can specifically say that after the bus ties came on, we called that out. I'm almost sure Jack did get it because I had him then check the helium valve and the nitrogen, helium and the nitrogen valve.
Okay, we're just trying to make sure to determine if we do have a switch problem. The INCO did send low bit rate command just prior to LOS there before LOI, which is the way it's called out in the flight plan, and then you should have come along later and with a command reset, setting the switch to high bit rate and a command reset, switched into high bit rate mode, and for some reason it did not go into high bit rate.
Well, you want to test it out here before we go around?
That's a pretty good thought. I think we will. On standby, we'll figure out how we're going to do it here. Okay, Jack, we just now commanded low bit rate, and you're in low bit rate. We'd like you now to select high and command reset.
Okay, Gordy, you also have an oscillation in uplink signal strength and a clicking in the audio. Do you read? We just went steady and at about 60%, 70% signal strength.
Roger, we hear that.
Okay, you want me to go ahead and command high and command reset?
That's affirmative. The high gain just went to wide beam, but we're still reading you loud and clear. Go ahead and high bit rate and command reset.
Okay, high bit rate, command reset.
Okay, it seems to have worked properly, Jack.
Okay, Gordy, I may not have got the command reset at 6 minutes. I just can't tell you right now.
Okay, I want to assure you it was no big problem as far as the burn goes. No great loss here.
I hope not.
America Houston, about 5 minutes to LOS now. We'd like to have you go ahead and get the jet inhibits and the covers open as shown in the flight plan so we can see that before we lose you. Affirmative. You're there. You're going to have to do it in a minute anyway, so since you're there already, stay there.
Okay. We're there. We've got tape motion.
Okay.
Gordy, the AC, DDAC rule has been changed, and you should have the proper jet configuration now.
Okay, we see it. It looks good, Gino.
Okay.
If you're still with us, we're going to open up the mapping camera laser altimeter cover.
Okay, Jack.
Okay, we're going to extend the mapping camera.
Roger on that.
Okay, okay, Mark. Barbara Pole.
Roger.
Estimating a change of shift briefing at 3:45 Houston time, 1 minute and 16 seconds away from loss of signal on this first lunar revolution. Participants in the flight director change of shift briefing will be Jerry Griffin, who has been in charge of the Gold flight team, Dr. Royce Hawkins, the flight surgeon, and Charlie Dumas, the ECOM. At 90 hours, 40 minutes ground elapsed time, this is Apollo Control. This is Apollo Control at 90 hours, 41 minutes, ground elapsed time. We've had loss of signal. As the Apollo 17 spacecraft coasted behind the moon on the first lunar orbit, currently in an orbit measuring 52.6 by 168.6 nautical miles. We'll be up again in about 47 minutes, or approximately. The tables are not up on the display here on the next acquisition of signal. As to the next time the spacecraft comes around on the second lunar orbit. Change of shift briefing at 3:45, approximately 10 minutes from now, in the small briefing room, Building 1 newsroom. Participants, Flight Director Jerry Griffin, Flight Surgeon Dr. Royce Hawkins, and the ECOM, Charlie Dumas. At 90 hours, 42 minutes, ground elapsed time, this is Apollo Control.
This is Apollo Control at 91 hours, 23 minutes. We're 23 seconds away from acquiring Apollo 17 on its second revolution of the moon. During this pass, we will send up a DOI-1 pad. That's instructions to the crew for the descent orbit insertion maneuver. We should be acquiring any time now. We'll stand by for the first call.
Read you loud and clear.
Okay, Robert. We should have gotten everything right on up through AOS here in the flight plan.
Good show.
And a pad camera should be running right now. Okay, Houston, America here.
we stop the orbital photo path frame 59, and at about the substellar point, we took 59 to 66, and frame 67 was taken of the dark slide on the corner of Lobachevsky.
Roger, American.
Those frames that Ron mentioned, this is Jack, that he mentioned were taken of an area where there's a much lighter gray albedo rather than the tannish gray, it's pure gray material that generally is on the rim crest of a number of craters. It may be related to the swirls that we see elsewhere.
Roger, Jack.
Bob, we're a beam of Alberoni coming up on Goddard and barging us right now.
Roger, America, we're tracking you on the map here, watching it.
Okay. Alberoni has got a variations in the in its floor, variations in albedo. It almost looks like a pattern as if water were flowing on a beach. It's that irregular, not in in great areas, but in small areas around on the southern side. And the part that looks like it's a water washing pattern is of a much lighter albedo, although I cannot see any real source for it. The texture, however, looks about the same.
Roger, Jack.
Houston, America, for your intro, it took an hour, a minute and 45 seconds for the map mirror mapping camera to extend, and a minute and 45 for it to retract.
Roger, Ron, copy. 145, extend and retract.
Bob, what's our altitude now?
Looks like you're crossing just about 90 miles, but we'll firm that up here, Jane. You're 90.8,
okay.
America.
Okay, thank you. Bob, this is Jack. The question of these irregular swirls that we've got in Mare Marginis, and else, yeah, I'm looking just north of Nepper now. Mare, there just is no visible relief. Although there seem to be some sinuous systematics anyway to the distribution. Like it'll be a very dark area associated with the light area, and that dark area is darker than the Mare. I think the pictures will show that. Now in the highlands, however, the light albedo areas, which are very comparable, that appear to be swirl-like patterns, are the same type, seem to be associated with the crests of crater ridges and other high points. Right over concentration of these now in the northern part of Marginis, where the rule of a of the light areas being associated with a either symmetrically around a much darker area than the normal Mare, are on one side, and in this case, generally the south side of a dark area, is that rule is very clear. And that also seemed to hold in the backside, that there was a slightly darker region between areas of light-colored swirls.
Roger, Jack, we understand, and we're standing by. We have a DOI pad and some other updates.
Okay, we'll go back to work.
America Houston, we like pan camera off.
You're reading our mind, Bob.
It's off.
Roger.
It's off.
Pan camera's off, and we'd like, except we've got the DOI target load, the CSM state vector, PIVA, and an SPS tail-off constant.
Okay, you've got accept, Bob.
Roger, Gene, and there will be no PIVA bias in this.
Okay. Bob, I can start with that pad if you want it.
You're Roger. We're standing by. I'll start with DOI 1. Are you ready to copy?
Go ahead.
Purpose, DOI 1, SPS, GNN, 40035, plus 190, minus 064. 093113660. Noun 81s, minus 019016. All balls for Delta VY. Delta VZ is plus 00478 000228 000 00589er plus 00145 019er 74 022 019er 21 Sexton Star is 45 1875 19er 1 Let me say Trunnion again is 1-9-1. Rest of the pad is not applicable. Death Stars will be Sirius and Rigel. 133-200-030. 4-Jet, 15-second on the LH. Other comments, overburden limits. Delta V, 17 feet per second. Burn time, 2 seconds. Over.
Okay, Bob, ready for readback. DOI 1, SPS GNN 40035 plus 190 minus 064 093 3660 minus 01916 all zeros plus 00478 all zeros 228 all zeros 00589er plus 00145 01974 022 01921 451875 191 rest of pad is NA Sirius and Rigel, 133-200-030, 4 jets, 15 second, ullage. Overburn limits, Delta V, 17 feet per second. Burn time, 2 seconds.
Roger, Jack, good readback. Okay, I've got a map update for at 93-38 in the flight plan.
Okay, go ahead, I have it.
Okay, Ron, AOS without burn, 933137. With burn is 3424, over.
Okay, without, 933137. With burn, 3424.
Roger, Ron. I've got a, you can go back to block, Ron, and on that same page with the J3, I've got the T-Horizon and TCA.
Okay, ready to copy, go ahead.
Okay, you can go to block on the computer. T-Horizon time, 934804. TCA minus 20 is 935044. Over.
Okay, T Horizon 934804. DCA minus 20 is 5044.
Roger, good readback. Okay, Ron, over at 9352, 9352. We've got a different in the down 89 value.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, the noun 89s have changed to the following. Noun 89, the first one, plus 20.284. Plus 15.151. Minus 001.96. Over.
Okay. Okay, it's a plus 20284 and a plus 15151 and a minus 001.96.
Roger, Ron, and here's a note for you. The landmark is F Crater, located on landing site, picture 4 of 4 in the lunar landmark maps. Over.
Okay, I understand.
Okay, and I've got a TEI minus 5, Pat, over.
Okay, go ahead, TEI 5.
Roger, Jack, TEI minus 5. SPS, GNN, 38570, plus 049er, plus 092, 098, 39er, 4324. Mount 81s, plus 232, 98, minus 2403. 1, minus 11528, 1-9-3, 0-9-9-er, 3-1-8. The rest of the pad is all not applicable. Set stars, Sirius and Rigel, 1-3-3-2-0-0-0-3-0. Ullage, 4 jet, 12-second. Comments, burn undocked, assumes a DOI, over.
Okay, Bob, TEI 5, SPS GNN. 38570 plus 049 plus 092 098 39 4324 plus 23298 minus 24031 minus 11528 193 099 318. Rest of pad NA, Sirius and Rigel, 133200030. LH4 jets for 12 seconds. Comment 1, burn undocked. Comment 2, assume DOI.
Good read back, Jack.
Okay, what else can we do for you?
Standby 1 here. I've got an addition for Ron on that comment about that F Crater landmark. Let me get it straight here and I'll come right up to Ron on it.
Okay, I'll stand by.
Ron, this additional comment will have the crater is 8 nautical miles north of your track. You will lose the landmark at a 36 degree elevation angle, over.
Okay, it's 8 miles north, and I'll lose it at 30 degrees. Okay, so that'll be pretty quick, yeah.
36 degrees, it's pretty quick still.
Is that the one on Family Mountain?
Stand by on that, Ron. Let me look at the book here. And I'll get Farouk to help me out on that one.
Okay, Houston, I got F greater now. I'm all squared away. Thank you.
Okay, Ron, it's right in the middle of that landing site 404, which is right before Aitken in the book on your on the landmark tracking book, and it's right dead center in that page.
Okay, I've got it now. I wrote down 404. It's 404.
Okay, Houston, we've got a good shot of the landing site.
Roger, understand, and roger on.
The shadows, Bob, go all the way across the scarp. And very long, pyramiding shadows go all the way past Family Mountain. It looks like the sculptured hills are lit up on this side, but it almost puts the entire North Massif in shadow from where I stand.
America, Houston.
Quite an interesting place to land down there.
America, Houston.
We can now, I think, see contrast down in the shadow. And the only part of the scarp that's visible, I think Jack picked it out, as being right where Lara is.
Roger, America, Houston.
Roger, go ahead.
Roger, just some words in your, you'll be going through your system checklist here, and you'll probably see that it says dump the wastewater if it's greater than 85%, and you are at about 89.6%. We would like you not to dump the wastewater until the nominal time in the flight plan. Do not dump the wastewater during this system check. Over.
Okay, and I understand it was about 94 hours, as I recall.
That's affirmative. That's where the nominal time is, and that's where we'd like it dumped.
Okay. Bob, that's a fantastic black and white shot of the landing area with the shadow stretching across most of it.
Right to understand.
Bob, I can now see down in through the shadow. I can see Bear Mountain. I can see, I can't really make out the slide yet. Most of the North Massif are still in shadow due to the sculptured hills. And just at the point where we can start really to see through the shadows and see the some hummocky terrain on the North Massif, it just went out of my next reach. But I did see some sort of albedo change that went across the canyon about in the vicinity of the scarp. Thank you. With respect to the landing site, this is Jack. When we had near, or we're closer to low phase angle approaching it, when I first had it in view, there was a clear lightning in the area of the light mantle. It was not sharply defined, but around the crater Lara and Nansen, and to the west of the Scarp, there was very clearly slightly brighter reflectivity.
Roger, Jack.
Apollo 17's orbit is 168.8 by 52.5 nautical miles. Present altitude 154.9 nautical miles and moving toward Apolloon.
Houston, America, the mapping camera and laser altimeter covers are closed. Now I'm going to enable A1, A2, and C2.
Roger, Gene.
Yeah, it looks like the old gravity gradient worked there or something. I didn't see it get out of attitude at all. Did you all see any movement at all?
Max air was about 2/10 to 3/10 of a degree run.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Houston, I should have cued you on changing SPS pressure indicators. You want to see that again?
Stand by on that. Jack, it's not required to go back to them again. We watch it on telemetry.
Okay. I'll try to remember to be a little more informative.
No problem, Jack. No problem.
Hey, Houston, there are the torque and angles.
Roger, we see them. They look good.
Just another little matter of interest. Once the Earth is in the field of the view, which it's about, looks like it must be about 12 degrees from Regulus, it's so bright that it blacks out any, blanks out the telescope for any star recognition. However, it worked real good in the sextant. You can see the star real well. You just have to assume it's regular, so.
Roger, with that star angle difference.
Okay, I'll torque at 3-0. I torqued at 3-0, at 0930.
Roger, we copy.
And the first star angle difference was, you can get a little bit lax about it. If you want to spend a little time at it, you can get fireballs every time, looks like.
Roger, on. With that star angle difference on the second one, I can assume it was Regulus. I think you're safe in your assumption.
Oh, yeah, right. He had to do it or else I'd have to go down there and do it.
Roger.
This is Apollo Control at 92 hours, 11 minutes. Apollo 17 now at the highest point of its orbit, 168.8 nautical miles. 37 minutes remaining before loss of signal on this revolution.
Merrick to Houston, T-40 looks good.
Okay, my fire, we'll go ahead and maneuver to attitude then.
Roger.
Houston, I think I put the wrong number in on the pitch. We'll correct it. It's 228, isn't it?
That's affirmative, Jane.
Okay, we'll fix that.
This is Apollo Control. Apollo 17 is maneuvering to the proper attitude for the descent orbit insertion maneuver. This will put the crew heads down.
America Houston, we'd like to high gain to auto.
You got it.
Roger. Thank you. America Houston. We'd like you to hold off switching to Omni Charlie until we cue you on that.
Roll call. Bob, this is Jack.
Go ahead, Jack.
Was there any indication on the seismometers of an impact about the time I thought I saw a light flash on the surface?
Stand by that. We'll check on that, Jack.
No, don't worry about it. I thought somebody was looking at it. It could have been one of the other light flashes.
Right, we copied the time and the pattern.
But I have a place marked. Okay, I got it marked on the map, too.
Bob, the star sextant checks out okay.
Roger, Gene. Good show.
Flight Director Pete Frank now checking all flight control positions for a go, no-go on the descent orbit insertion burn. It's getting a go from all positions.
America Houston, you are go for DOI, and you can leave the high gain selected. We're holding good. Gene, say again, you're way down in the mud on that one. Can you say again, please?
Roger, understand we are go for DOI, and you have the high gain.
That's affirmative, Gene. Just...
Hey, Bob, I know I've argued against this kind of thing, but you got tenths on that burn time?
0.1 on that.
Okay, 0.1.
Jack, just some words from the back room on you. The there may have been an impact at the time you called, but the moon is still ringing from the S4B impact, so it's masked any other would mask any other impact. So they may be able to strip it out at a later time, but right now they don't see anything at your call time.
Just my luck. Bob, log us for a picture of the Earth at 9240 on mag, Oscar, and we're on frame 6-8.
Roger, Jack, we got that.
You've got a lot of healthy weather out there in the Pacific today. Looks like most of those things we talked about yesterday up in the Hawaii region and also in the south have intensified.
Roger. America, Houston, We're about 3 minutes to LOS, and everything is looking great. No changes since our go for DOI. We'll expect to see you at 93.34.24.
We'll see you at 93.34.24, Bob.
Roger, Gene.
This is Apollo Control at 92 hours, 49 minutes, and we've had loss of signal as Apollo 17 goes behind the moon. During this pass, Jack Schmidt saw a flash just north of the crater Grimaldi at an elapsed time of 90 hours, 18 minutes, and thought it might be a meteor impact. We could not confirm that, however. The moon was still ringing from the S4B impact and would mask out other activity on the seismometer recorders in the science support room here. Apollo 17 will perform the descent orbit insertion maneuver behind the moon just after the start of the third revolution, and at a point near Perilune, the low point in that revolution. Ignition time for that maneuver is 93 hours, 11 minutes, 36 seconds. Delta V, change of velocity of 197.4 feet per second. Duration of the burn, 22 seconds. And we anticipate a resultant orbit of 58 8.9 by 14.5 nautical miles. If the burn is performed as expected, we'll next acquire Apollo 17 at 93 hours, 34 minutes, 24 seconds. If Apollo 17 is unable to perform the burn, acquisition time will be 93 hours, 31 minutes, 37 seconds. We'll come back up just prior to the no-burn acquisition time and stand by through that period of several minutes. At 92 hours, 51 minutes, this is Mission Control, Houston. This is Apollo Control at 93 hours, 30 minutes. We're a minute and a half away from acquisition without a burn. 4 minutes, 10 seconds away from acquisition given a nominal descent orbit insertion burn. Acquisition between those two times would indicate a partial burn of some kind. We'll leave the line up now and we've passed the no-burn AOS time and do not have a signal. That's an encouraging sign that we did perform a maneuver. Minute to nominal AOS. We have a signal. Right on the money.
Hello, Houston, America.
America, Houston, go ahead.
Okay, the burn was good on all counts. 22-second burn. It was on time. VGX 1-9-8-2. Roll after the burn 357, 225, and 003. Residuals were plus zero, plus point two, and plus point one. Delta VC is 0.1, and that was with delta V total set into the EMS. Should have been zero, and the residual on the EMS was plus 0.1. Oxidizer is 305. And fuel is 311, and an unbalanced 150 decrease. We're in a 59.1 by 14.9.
Okay, America, sounds great.
It looks pretty great. We're getting back down among us where us plain folks belong.
Roger.
Those orbital numbers are an onboard readout. We'll confirm those in a few minutes after some tracking.
Houston, this is the LMP. There seem to be two general kinds of ray patterns, those associated with a lot of secondaries and light-colored, and those that have no visible secondaries. And that's independent yet from the irregular light-colored areas we've been calling swirls.
Roger, Jack, we're copying.
Houston, there are also a lot more, there is a lot more of that light-colored swirl-like irregular material or discoloration, if, whatever you want to call it, in the backside highlands, particularly as we approach Marginis, than I had previously gathered from the available photography.
Roger, Jack.
There still seems to be no relief associated with it, although in many cases it seems to follow ridge lines or crater rims partway. In other cases it's quite irregular in its distribution.
Okay.
Bank A, that time with the chamber pressure was up to 95.
Roger, Ron, and we got tracking data on you. Has a 13.1 perilune, rather.
Okay, that's
Roger.
Great, Bob. And we're still looking at that zero bias on the PC meter of about 5 to 7 PSI.
All right, Roger.
Okay. Some of the boys might be interested to know that in a place where the sun is just grazing the slope, it's a steep slope on the north rim of Crisium,
I could see the horizontal lineaments that were such a controversy on 15.
Roger, understand. On the north rim of Christian?
Probably a big one for the central peak. Right, there's some very steep slopes that just have grazing sun on them now, and with the binocs, you can see that horizontal lineation pattern.
Roger.
Okay, just T horizon would be good. Yeah. Okay, I got the edge of Perseum now. West edge, yeah. Pretty good hills on the side of Perseum there. You're a lot smoother looking material than I thought it would be.
Ron, you're about 1 minute from T horizon.
Okay, Bob, thank you. Here.
And Ron, we're copying you on Fox, we believe. Is that a firm?
Yes, that's right.
Roger.
You're not supposed to copy the other guy, though. Are you copying the other guy?
No, just you, Ron.
Okay.
I may have been talking loud.
Okay, Ryan, you should be at T horizon.
Mark T horizon.
Okay, it's pointing at the horizon, all right. I don't see the crater yet. But... Okay. Okay, I can see the rims of microbus A and B. Okay. I don't see it yet. I can see microbus A and B real well. Okay, I'm going to pick out one and start marking on. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. That's the wrong one. Okay, now I see what I'm supposed to mark on. Okay. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Twenty-two, 23, and it's gone. Okay. The ones I just wrote under. Right? Okay. Yeah, let's, take a look and see if it looks like a center cone. Hey, there's Murali Gamma, the mound sticking up there right beside Murali. Hey, you guys are going to have some good hills to run down in there. At all coming up?
No,
we're looking north. Crazy radar is going to be in the way. The limb. Okay, it's going through the landing site now. The shadow is just up to see the scarp on there.
See what they mean by sculptured hills, Gene? See the knobby character in that area there?
Knobby.
That's part of it.
That's a massif there, too.
Now we're just over the rim of Serenitatis, looking over the Graben Plain.
Yeah, I can just see. I'm going to switch to 17-1. Just got six of them on 17-1, and then the other three were on F crater. 17-1 was just barely in the Sherlock. Was just barely beyond the shadow.
This is all supposedly covered with a dark mantle, Gene, what you're seeing down there.
Yeah, the sun angles are such you can't tell the difference.
And look at those Mare ridges, though.
I tell you, that's looking out to the great.
That's the old Littrell site
desert down in there. I think so. I think we're just about ready to climb.
I think the Terminator's giving you the feeling of that, maybe. Ain't nothing out there.
Jack Houston, can you see any albedo difference in the landing site area between the dark massif and the light area?
We can't see any difference between in the low areas between the dark mantle and other materials right now. We're right at the Terminator. Yeah, but Jack and I weren't really looking at the landing site. I think Ron was.
But
yeah, you could really see a difference between the South Massif and the mantle material around through there. The mantle is not nearly as dark as it looks on the pictures, though. But the massif, South Massif, especially looked almost a whitish color. I guess it's because partly the sun was shining on it.
Did you see anything that looked like the slide?
Oh, yeah, you can see the slide on the thing. You definitely see the scarp going across through there. I was primarily concentrating on looking for the various craters, so I didn't spend that much time, you know, concentrating on how the thing looked. But in the marks on the thing, the first about four or five marks were on F crater, and then I saw Sherlock about halfway through it, and I got about five marks on the Sherlock, or 17-1.
Gene. Houston, in crossing Crissium and Marginis, it looked fairly clear that with the small fresh craters, and I don't have a good size estimate right now, I think I'm looking in terms of 100 or 2 meters, you can distinguish where blocks have been thrown up by them and are not, possibly giving depth of the local regolith from the pictures you'll get in there.
Roger, Jack.
And also on that lineation question, not only where the sun grazes a slope, do you see the horizontal lineations, but they're at the southern end of the shadowed area on a slope. You get a couple other lineations showing up, at least in a couple places I saw. One would be parallel to the slope, that is cross contour, and the other was at a angle to that direction, oh, say of about 30 degrees.
Roger, Jack. We're copying you loud and clear, and no problem with comm at all.
Okay, we just had sunset.
And Houston, America, on Mag Bravo Bravo, 75% to 70%, were utilized on J3 and F crater and 17-1 through the sextant.
Roger, I just want to confirm, Ron, you started on J3 and then you went to F crater and...
Yeah, I went to F crater and then back to Sherlocker, 17-1.
Roger.
Actually, on J3, I took 4 marks on a crater that was to the west of J3, and then I finally saw J3 and started marking on it.
Roger, Ron.
Okay, Houston, Mag, Oscar, Oscar is 8-5.
Roger, Jack, thank you.
And there's a number of pictures. Now, just a minute. Let me try to give you a general feeling for where they were taken. Stand by one. Okay, a number of the last pictures that were taken on that series or that rev were taken between, say, about 115 east and 100 east, and they show several examples of the light-colored our swirl
coming up now.
Alteration to the surface, and that's in Highland Country where that is a distinct gray against the tan gray or tan Highland background, general Highland color.
Okay, Jack, I got that. Houston, we'd like you to move up and do the wastewater dump starting now in the O2 fuel cell purge.
Okay, we'll get to that. And Mag, Quebec, Quebec is on frame 50.
Roger, copy.
Okay, you want to dump the wastewater on the front side?
That's a firm round. We'd like to get a start dump now so we have it dumped prior to the camera pass. Or...
Oh, okay.
We want to get it dumped prior to the UV work there, Ron.
Okay, that's right. I'm sorry, I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I've got to go vent, battery vent to...
Okay. Battery vent is closed and going to dump A.
And camera power going off. Okay, Houston, beginning a fuel cell purge, 02.
Roger, Jack.
Bob, any objection to making that verb 49 maneuver now?
Stand by on that. America, no objection to going to VERP 49 maneuver any time. Just do not open the UV door until the 94:45 flight plan time.
Okay, we're with you.
This is Apollo Control at 94 hours, 8 minutes. Apollo 17 now is maneuvering to the attitude from which the ultraviolet spectrometer and the infrared scanning radiometer experiments will be performed. The start of those experiments on this pass will be after LOS, behind the moon.
Job you could probably handle.
Listen, after that answer, I'll build one down there for you.
Thank you, sir. Hey, you can go to LEM CM Delta P.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
America Houston, the fuel cell 3 purge can be terminated.
I beat you.
This is Apollo Control at 94 hours, 15 minutes. Apollo 17 is just south of the Ocean of Storms now. Shortly we'll be coming up on the crater Grimaldi again. That's where Jack Schmidt saw a flash on the last pass. We're showing an orbit of 58.9 by 14.3 nautical miles, with the present altitude of 28.1 nautical miles.
Hey, Bob, who are you talking to us with? Honeysuckle or Goldstone? Honeysuckle, I'd guess.
We're talking through Goldstone, Gene.
Okay, looks like about a toss-up from here. I'll tell you, there is really one heck of a big low-pressure area developing somewhere off the coast of California, Washington, or Canada out in the Pacific northwest part of the country.
Roger, we copy.
Watching it earlier today, but I tell you now, it's really dragging in some other clouds with us. It must cover an enormous distance, and it's got some real spectacular circulation.
Just for curiosity, are you using a monocular on that?
No, I'm using a binocular.
Roger.
Bob, it's got a trailing front. I can't really see the states or even the North American continent because it's
standby, Jack. We'd like to, or Gene, we'd like
pretty
to
well covered
water number.
Okay.
Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Okay, I was just going to say it's got a looks like a tremendous trailing front, roughly. Oh, north, northwest, south, southeast. That looks like it may just sweep up the western coast. It's hard to tell how far off the actual center rotation or even a front is. I just remember from earlier this morning when I could see land masses that it appeared to me to be off the Pacific Northwest out in the ocean.
Roger. Jack, Houston here. We've just been kicking around with Farouk, and if you get it, if you want to, during any of your free time, if you have any, you might look at Copernicus with your binoculars and see if the dike goes all the way across. He would recommend using the binoculars. Don't take any of your eat or sleep time at all, but you might get a chance on this one eat pass too as you go by there.
Okay, I'll give her a try. You might give me a couple minutes warning the next time around.
Okay, Jack.
I'm not sure the attitude is too good for that. I wish I'd thought of it this round.
Right. Well, we were pretty busy coming up on it this time. I think that's why we mentioned the attitude may be okay during the eat period. We don't want you to break away from your eat period unless you feel you can spare some time.
Looking at the southern edge of Grimaldi, Bob, and we probably have it covered on photos, but there's a nice tangential to slightly circumferential graben along the southern wall and climbs out over the western rim and off of the eastern rim. And that graben is pre-Mare.
Okay, I copy on that, Jack. As long as we're talking about Grimaldi, you might just we'd like to have you brief Ron exactly the location of that flash you saw. We'll probably ask him to take a picture of it maybe during one of his solo periods.
Before we get awfully involved, just let me tell you what our motive is here in the next couple hours. That's to eat and get done what's in the flight plan, and come our rest period, we're probably going to turn out the lights and make sure everything's done by then so we can start it on time tonight.
Yeah, that's a definite, we concur with that definitely, Gene. Don't want you to work into your sleep period. Gene Houston.
Go ahead.
Gene, last night you didn't use a tone booster, and the word you gave us was that it wasn't working, and We're just wondering if you want, we're thinking about working up a test board to see if did you test it off thoroughly to make sure it wasn't working, or was that just your desire not to use it?
We tried it, Bob, and it did not work. The only reason I'm reluctant on a test is I just don't want it to take much time.
Well, I don't think it'd take much time. It's the only thing I could say is it would, you know, the two obvious things, I'm sure you checked them, Gene, would be the utility power and made sure you had the right lamp test on when you tried it. And that's the only, I'm sure you did it, and that's the only obvious thing, maybe a circuit breaker or something like that.
We checked it both on the left side and on the right side with two separate utility powers and verified that the master alarms came on with the test on both sides, and nothing ever happened.
Right, I was sure of that, Gene. Just wanted to make you put everybody at ease that it's just not working. That was essentially the test. Just forget anything we said about tests. Raj. Got you guys trained up there finally.
Houston, American.
Raj, go ahead, Raj.
Hey, if I don't find my scissors here one of these days, I think it takes about four bolts on either side of the, you know, the optic, where they store the optics. It looks like there are four little Thule bolts that'll come out.
Yeah.
And I think maybe they might be back behind there. I don't know. See, there's a great big slot up at the top of that. No, it's at least an inch. Inch between the top of the optics thing and the top of the spacecraft. I look back in there at the flashlight and I can't see anything, but the big hole back there anyhow.
I think the commander might have something to say.
If Bob, just ignore everything he said, we'll leave him a pair of our scissors, and he's just worried about being hungry.
Oh, Roger. Those are your EVA scissors too, aren't they?
But he is not Yeah, but we can handle it with one down there. He is not taking a spacecraft apart to find his scissors, and I will not let him go hungry.
Roger.
Okay, either way.